And this is the world famous Phil Hendry Show. This then is Attila.
Who?
Attila.
I don't give a fuck about my bad reputation.
Yeah.
Never catch me slipping. Red cup solo sipping after whip with your bitches. Don't give a fuck about opinions. Fast don't pay the bills, I'm just keeping it real. When you're out on the town, I hope you're thinking of me. Sipping liquor at the bottle, smoking up electric. The roll up the
shut up.
To the sea.
All right, so anyway, welcome. There is music from a kid likely to take a gun to school. It's Attila. It's music from a kid likely to bring a firearm to school.
Well, Phil, I'm glad you are laughing and joking about that because it frightens the hell out of some of us.
Anyway, turn that goddamn shit down before I throw up. No, it's great. Love it, love it, love Attila. Thank you very much, guys. Glad to see you back working and singing about essentially the same shit you were singing about. See, some bands evolve. Some bands change. Some bands do. Some bands can. Some bands.
I think Attila's good. Why are you dissing him?
Because I don't think that they are doing anything. I think Attila is an example of a band that's lazy as fuck. Now get out and do something, man!
Well, you know, you've got a point there. I wouldn't know this music. You know, I wouldn't know this music if they used it to torture me into accepting Big Brother. You know, do you remember... What are you looking at, Margaret?
What are you talking about, Big Brother?
You don't remember the original, do you? I do. I don't know. Many of us forget the original, but by God, I'll never forget. I won't let people forget the original.
What are you talking about? The original 1984?
Yes, with Eddie O'Brien. And at the end of the film, he stands there and goes, "Long live Big Brother! Long live Big Brother!" And he becomes, you know, he's very...
So he's enamored of Big Brother.
He's, what is it?
He is enamored of Big Brother.
Yes, he's enamored, whatever the hell.
All right, so thank you. And what does that say?
What does it say? It doesn't say jack shit. Forget it.
Well, the general got confused.
No, I didn't get confused. These horse and buggy types just, you know.
Well, General, hey, you know what? They say 1984, Big Brother.
Yes, that's right. So,
you were making a point that Attila should work harder.
I don't give a shit, is what I'm saying. Will someone please listen to me? When it comes to Attila, I don't give a fuck. There.
You know, I don't know where it started, because I know I'm guilty of this, but the language.
It started with me, and the rest of you guys have picked up on it like you're all this in a bag of ding-dang chips.
Oh, that's right, Phil. Saying the F word makes me something special.
Well.
All right, hold on. So the lady that they call the Ebola nurse doesn't want to be called the Ebola nurse, so naturally we're going to call her the Ebola nurse. Right. Her name is Stacey Hickox. She has a message for politicians. Please stop calling me the Ebola nurse. Now, this woman, Margaret, you were making some observations on.
Well, if you look at this Stacey Hickox, is that her name, Stacey?
I don't know. It got cut off, but let's just say it is. Or Casey or some bullshit.
Hey, you know what? I want to know what her name is. I want to get this right. If I'm going to rip into someone.
Yes, ma'am.
But the lady is on the cover of a lot of publications. And the woman is talking about all of these things. She's got the big photograph like it's a publicity shot.
Yeah, so let's take a look here. The Ebola nurse is what they... She didn't want to be called that. And she does have this... She's a very pretty girl.
Well, she may be, quote, pretty, which I don't think she is, with her blue eyes and her red hair. And
well, that red hair, you know.
Let me tell you about redheads, friend.
All right, hold on.
She... How filthy your minds can be. She may be very pretty with her flowing red hair. Her name is Casey. I knew it, see?
All right, Casey.
See, well, that...
Can't get over it, huh?
No, I can't get over that. I butchered it.
Her name is Casey. Then what?
Well, she's got the picture as if she thinks she's a movie star. And she's holding forth on all kinds of political points of view. I don't know.
Well, maybe she's a media star in the making. I bet you she probably will parlay this into some kind of media job, don't you think?
No, I don't think. If there's any self-respect... Are you kidding? Oh, God.
No, if I'm a producer and I see her, I would interview her. I would get her on camera and I'd start interviewing her to see how she is on camera. But she may be too tough to take because she's... In other words, people that are really opinionated are great when they touch, you know.
Well, when they're talking about something that we're all feeling.
Yes, when they're talking about something we're all feeling. But she's going on and on, man, about being, I don't know, constitutional rights. And how fucked up the Christie administration is, and how fucked up the Obama administration is, and what they ought to do better when it comes to all their, you know, constitutionality. She has opinions, and I'm not saying she's not entitled to opinions, but as far as her opinion goes, it may be that she is overdoing it.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I can understand if she's had her, quote, freedom taken from her, as she said. What happened? I thought people wanted these Ebola people to be quarantined.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of the people that need to be in quarantine, and a lot of people that don't.
Well, look, you can come back from a disease zone. You've had deaths. We're not aware of, or at least we weren't aware of, how contagious this disease was. She's coming back from this zone.
Well, you know, in my opinion, you ought to take everybody coming back from that Ebola zone and quarantine them in camps. You can put these camps into arid desert regions, well removed from large population centers, and then, and only then, at that time, do you segregate and quarantine, and these people will live in bunk housing with bunk beds, two to a room.
All right, General, we don't, you know...
You don't what?
We'll have to get the whole layout.
Let me tell you, you need the layout, because more and more of these Ebolas will be coming back, and then guess what? Then you'll be crapping it and throwing it up, and as that's pouring out of your ass at about 100 miles an hour, you'll be trying to get work done. It doesn't happen that way, my friend.
What are you talking about?
Yeah!
I'm telling you that you shit like you, like that guy in the Monty Python movie threw up with a fire hose. General Galen Shaw, at your service.
Hey!
You shit with a fire hose, huh?
Yes, that's right, Phil. You what a... You know, you're a child.
Well, I keep telling him, Pat.
Hey, General, I'm only reacting to how funny you are.
And can you imagine that woman there? If you're watching Phil TV, there she is on the screen. Can you imagine her shitting like she's become a volcano in Hawaii? Can you imagine it coming out of her ass hot and molten? Oh,
God damn!
All right, Margaret, thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't invent this disease. I'm just reporting it.
Coming out of her ass hot and molten. Anyway, here's what the lady said.
Phil, we've essentially said, which do we have to relive it?
Jesus, Henry.
Yes. Just for a second here. Her name is Stacy Hickox. Please stop calling me the Ebola nurse. She's 33. She's from Maine. She called out Governor Christie. She called out Paul LePage, who is the governor of her state. She's called out President Obama. She said they've disregarded medical science and the Constitution in hopes of advancing their career. She's really pissed off, and yet she doesn't look pissed off. She looks like a very smiling and lovely redheaded girl who I think is very conscious that she has the moment. She has America's attention, and it's her time in the sun.
You know, that's just it. I think she's very calculating.
Well, look. Why would we be against somebody that is ambitious, and why would we be against somebody that is...
Why are you calling her a bitch? She's on. Look, if they stick a camera in your face, you might as well smile.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I'm doing this, smiling it up.
You don't smile it up when someone's got you. If someone is watching you go to the bathroom to make sure that you're not infected, like something out of Ready...
All right, I doubt if anybody's watching her go to the bathroom.
You're sure of that?
I'm not sure of it, but I doubt it very much.
Because you know that Ebola is what they base the rage virus on. Oh,
get out of here, will you?
Well, they did.
Are you kidding?
The rage virus didn't exist, okay?
Yeah, but they did base in the mythology of the rage virus, it was combined with Ebola.
What are you talking about?
They did. They developed rage, and they had to use Ebola, so it infected quickly.
You mean in the comic book?
Yeah, in the 20-day comic book, yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, shit, you know. So, no kidding, man. They really wanted it.
Yeah, they wanted to see how fast it would spread, and they wanted to develop it so they could look at the rage virus and the inhibitor and all of this.
You know, the human race, man, like the human race is ever going to rid itself of its extreme emotions without just evolving out of it, you know, like we're going to be able to come up with a drug or something. I know that we have, drugs for a lot of things. One of the things we don't need a drug for is real human emotions. This is so fucked up. You know, what we need are drugs for things like schizophrenia. We need drugs for things like, you know, bipolar. We need drugs for things like depression. We need drugs for things like, you know, whatever, OCD, ACDC, UCIC, we all see Casey.
Very good, Phil.
Thank you. we need those drugs, man, but we don't need drugs for...
Look, Phil, I'm just reporting. I'm reporting it as I see it. Wow.
God, you laughed at the general?
Wow. Wow.
I'm just the way you said that, General.
Wow.
I think you humiliated him, Phil. It was not right.
Ms. Bright, you said humiliate.
No, I didn't say humiliate.
Yeah, you did.
I think you humiliated him.
What does that mean?
All right, thank you very much, General. Are you going to get something, or are you...
I'm walking it off. Do you mind?
All right.
I'm walking it off. Do you mind?
Yeah, he's just walking it off.
All right, you walk it off, then. So Christie and my governor in Maine, so says Casey Hickox, Paul LePage decided to disregard medical science, the Constitution. They bet that by multiplying the existing fear and misinformation about Ebola, they could ultimately manipulate everyone and proclaim themselves the protectors of the people. See, here's the thing. Manipulating the misinformation. So she's honestly saying that these guys have decided to lie about... I don't think folks, you know... I think we fall into this trap. I don't think these guys lie so much as they're just not too bright when it comes to certain things. And we don't want to believe that, because then that means we've got a failed leadership, and maybe the system is failing, and maybe all this shit like Ebola and rage virus and terrorism, it's all going to come smashing down on us, not because the powers that be want it to, because they're manipulating it, but because it really is evil, and we're not able to protect ourselves from it.
What?
Yeah, well, say that again.
I'm not saying it again, because I know that most of the audience understands what I'm talking about. You know?
Well, I mean, you're saying that we're really vulnerable.
Yeah, you're saying that we can't protect ourselves from the evil what exists.
No, I'm not saying we can't.
Well, you're saying that these people want to believe that this is all manipulated by the government of the powers that be, because it's easier to think that Daddy has control.
Yeah, it is. It's easier to think that Daddy is in control and Daddy is fucking with the system, and if only Daddy would stop doing that and just do his job, why, there wouldn't be any bad shit in the world. Now, that's the way grown adults think. And the reason why they think that way is because they're frightened to death, and because the alternative is too scary to consider. The alternative is there's bad shit like Ebola and terrorists and all kinds of stuff. And in recent years, we have witnessed our inability to protect ourselves from it. We've witnessed the system's inability to protect us from it. So rather than accept reality like grown people, we create all of these scenarios of conspiracy. That's all I'm trying to say.
Well, you say that in such a calm way, Phil. It disturbs me.
Yeah, Phil, it's like, you know, do you understand what you're saying?
Yes, I understand what I'm saying. Why would I not? What's wrong with...
Well, I'm just telling you, a lot of people, they can't take it.
I can tell you this much. Excuse me. We go back to World War II. I always talk about World War II.
Oh, here we go again.
You got to get up a better example.
World War II is the greatest example for any culture anywhere of what to do and what not to do. World War II stands as a shining example, man. And I'm going to tell you that was a time when nobody knew what was going to happen. The world was at war with this racist evil that mercifully, the American people, the people in North America, didn't have a clue as to what was really happening. Not until the soldiers got over there and began fighting and saw the concentration camps. Then it all came home to them. And you can talk to them. The soldiers themselves will tell you that. All right, look, I'm done with all of that bullshit. We do have to get Bob Bacon up here with some traffic here on the highways and byways. Besides the Ebola nurse, what else we got?
Well, we are also looking at this story about the record company and the amounts of monies, that are made by just a handful of artists. Only 1% of all artists make the money in the record business, and the rest of it is made by... 1% of the people make 77% So that means 99% of the artists are left to make the 22-2-2.
No, dude, here's the... It's 77...
I'll do it. It is 77 of the people...
77% of the music, right?
Phil, I'll do it. 77... Go ahead.
77% of the music.
77% of the music.
Is, I mean, of the money.
You know what, you... This guy would fuck up a blowjob.
Wow.
Well, I'm sorry.
Margaret, you know, I'm getting tired of it.
77% of the money made in the music business is made by 1% of the artists. That's what we're going to be talking about here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show right after Bob Bakian and Traffic Bob.
All right, now, Bill, the downtown here has got the people that crawling all over themselves. I tell you, they've never had such great times as these moving themselves and scraping themselves up off the pavement. Over here in the CSI chair, I'm seeing, like, I'm seeing things, and there's a creepy... There's somebody creeping up on me, and oh my God, look out, the guy's got the titties all over me just like somebody with rage virus. Bob, thank you, I'm traffic.
Man on a minute hand in my Hublot, I'm about that art of war gospel.
Yeah, yeah.
Scott Picasso, drawing a Roscoe, using the blood of a usual thug who was told die slow. Your money on me, bet it all, you know I'ma set it off.
Let's get the small talking. The Slaughterhouse, Phil Hendry Show, and philhendryshow.com, and a very, very pleasant good morning to you. I want to thank all of yous for bearing with us yesterday as we had a morning table read over at the animated show that I'm working on that I'm not supposed to tell you the name of because it's all very hush-hush, so it makes me sound like a real dumbass here, not able to tell you the name, but I'm not. And you could say, well, why don't you just go ahead and tell us anyway, Phil? Well, I like to work, and maybe, you know, I'll be able to work again if I, you know, adhere to the rules and regs that have been laid down for me by that show.
Hey.
Thank you. Now... So we had a table read yesterday, very, very early, so we had to go with a taped product on the show, and we're back here, dead asleep, man.
Why are you tired?
I don't know. I'm just busting ass, and when I say busting ass, I don't mean farting. I mean I'm breaking my ass.
Oh, look at the child there.
All right, bud. And so, why am I tired? I just, you know, last night I went to bed at a reasonable hour. One of the things that happens to me is I wake up in the middle of the night, and I start... getting online and reading things, and...
See, that you have to stop doing that.
Phil, that's, you know, and your blood pressure increases, and then the next thing you know, you can't get back to sleep, right?
What?
I said you can't get back to sleep, excuse me.
Word.
You can't buck back...
Get back to sleep.
I can say it. You can't back up buck. What the hell?
Back up buck? You know what's happening? You're losing control of your consonants.
Yeah, you can't get...
Can't get back to sleep.
That's the one. Yeah, that was the one I was looking for.
Can't back up buck. What does that mean?
I don't know, Phil. I'm simply trying to do my duty as a United States Army General, as well as a co-host on this piece of you-know-what that you do.
Thank you. All right, so, yeah, the thing yesterday was really a lot of fun, but I do thank you guys for hanging with us there. Now, I want to tell you about our BSP-only show that is on Saturdays. We're going to expand that show. The autobiography of that show is only going to be one part of the BSP-only show. So it will include more than just the autobiographical sketch that we're doing there. We're going to have, for instance, a brand new character that's going to be weighing in on Saturdays. And he may weigh in earlier this week.
Well, you did say you'd have him on to promote him.
Yeah. His name is Bill Hardon.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding. Now, hold on. The show is called Bill Hardon's Land of the Free.
No, I thought it was... my understanding, it was that Land of the Free with Bill Hardon.
That's it. Yeah, I'm sorry. Land of the Free with Bill Hardon. He is a conservative commentator. He believes the country has gone straight to the devil under Obama. And it says here, I'm just reading his press material, a fresh new take on how Obama is a socialist and was born in Kenya.
What the hell is that? Not another one of these guys.
No, I don't know, but David G. Hall is propping this cat big time and feels that he is somebody that we need to be looking at. David's on the line with us. David, so you really like this guy, huh?
I like the guy. I brought him to you, and you said you needed a little something more on Saturday. I said, well, what about this guy? I've talked to Bill Hardon for years, and I remember when I first heard him on WKLF or KFL or I forget. I know where it was. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and he was doing a show there at Turn Right Here. turn right here, because your donut shop, okay? And he was doing a show. I got Daphne driving.
Right.
And he was doing a show. What does that mean, right?
Well, we figured the donut shop, she had to be driving.
Jesus, she's going to hear that. No, they're just kidding, baby.
Turn the radio down, David.
Sorry. Can you hear it?
No, I can't. I couldn't hear it originally, but just in case it's up, because she's hearing everything.
She's hearing everything because she's reading it. She's looking at it. It's being texted to her.
What is that? Just turn the radio down.
All right. So, but it was. One of her sisters was texting it.
Why would she be reading a text when she could be listening to it?
Because I gotta have the radio turned down, remember? Jesus.
Goodbye.
Now, wait a minute. Don't you hang up with me.
Not gonna be yelled at like that.
Well, that's a little prima donna of you, Phil.
No, that guy's got to bring it under control. Are you kidding me? So anyway, Bill Hardon, Land of the Free, coming up on Saturday at the latest. We may have him doing some other things here on the Phil Hendry Radio Show. Mavis Leonard, who was supposed to be with us yesterday doing her interesting tidbits, is joining us now from Southgate, California. And a very good morning to you, Mavis.
Yeah, Phil. Good morning to you, Phil. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, dear, and tell us about interesting tidbits.
Well, interesting tidbits, and I want to have some music, Robert. I'm sorry, Phil, if I could talk to my nephew.
Go ahead.
Robert?
Yeah,
I want to have music going to introduce interesting tidbits so we know, the people know the interesting tidbit is coming its way. So if you could get some music for it, I very so appreciate that, because I would like to see that's from 28. You were just talking about 28 Days Later.
Yeah, we was.
Why the hell would I want to have that for you? Kid, turn that off.
Turn that music off, Robert. That's...
Well, I thought it was kind of my idea, Ms. Leonard, because I thought it might, you know, be sort of dramatic.
I don't need nothing dramatic, Dickman. I want to have... Interesting, never mind the music. I'll pick something out and I'll give it to you. All right, that way you can't fool around with it.
Well, whatever you say, but I've got other selections lined up.
I don't need other selections lined up. Oh, God, I'm tired out before I know what you mean now, Phil.
It's tiring, isn't it? It's tiring dealing with people that are not listening to what you're saying.
I am absolutely tired out. Mr. Henry is right. Dealing with a bunch of numbskulls.
Well, I hope you're not referring to me.
Well, no, Margaret, I'm not referring to you. These are the dimwits. And I can tell you...
Well, you better not be referring to me.
Who said I better not...
I mean, I hope you're not referring to me.
That's better. No, I'm not. So,
all right, dear, so you have a interesting tidbits that we're going to be hearing, and this is a part of the show that was... What is that, man?
I don't want Tennessee Ernie. Who put that white man on? I don't hear the cracker. Turn that shit off.
Hold on. Get Bud.
I thought it would be interesting for the interesting tidbit.
It's not called interesting tidbit. You got a tidbit for a brain. You know that? I could pick your braid up with chopsticks.
That's mean.
I know it's mean, but you gotta admit it's funny.
It's very funny, yeah.
All right, so you have a... You know what, Bud? Your brain is simply on a serving dish.
All right, so with interesting tidbits...
You laughing too?
Yes, I am.
Interesting tidbits, Mr. Henry, is just simply me telling people stories from around the neighborhood. Here's one here. Joe Foster, age 76 degrees, was found walking downtown last night at 3 a.m. holding on to a statue of the Venus de Milo that was made out of paper mache. When he was asked by the police officer what he was doing with it, he said he was looking for a dumpster. He had worked for the last 3 weeks on this, and he had mistakenly put a penis on it. He was simply looking for a dumpster big enough to throw it in. Officer said, why don't you leave it at the side of the street, just let regular trash pick it up? He said, I would be embarrassed to leave this trash in front of my house, nor would I want to tempt any trash man from taking it home and putting it on his front lawn like he's all this in a bag of chips. I decided to find a dumpster, pitch that in. What you think of that?
Yeah, that's a goofball story. Where was this?
That was down here. Oh, you know that, Robert.
Yeah, I think it's down on down Delamo.
Yeah, down on Delamo, on Torrance.
He's walking down the street looking for a dumpster to put a paper mache. Was it paper mache?
Yeah, it was a paper mache Venus de Milo that this dumbass put a penis on. Can you feature that? That's exactly what this asswipe did. So he's looking for a place to dump it. interesting tidbit here with Mavis Leonard. Here's another interesting tidbit. A nurse at the local psychiatric center here in Del Amo came running and screaming from the main locked ward when she said she'd come in to change the bedpans of some of the patients and saw a man playing cards upside down. Not that the cards was upside down, but he was upside down. He somehow had got himself standing on his head, playing cards, reading business cards, putting on his clothes, and basically conducting his day's habits upside down. So the thing really freaked her out. You got it when he took a dump.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so...
Wait. So this guy was in his hospital bed.
He was in his hospital room in the ward, in the locked ward.
And these are the psychiatric patients.
That's correct, yes. And everything he done is upside down, so he's walking around on his hands.
Had this guy demonstrated any ability to do that?
I have no idea, Phil. I'm just reading from an interesting tidbit file.
Yeah, it's an interesting tidbit file that's compiled for.
Oh, I see. So you're not really familiar with these stories personally?
No, I'm not. Other than the fact, the local story. I mean, I will get familiar with this guy, because he is all messed up. I mean, can you dig that? The guy is walking around on his hands. I'll be with you in a minute. Goes to the bathroom, tried to take a dump, couldn't keep his pants down, because obviously the gravity was sucking him back up to his neck. So he just said, well, shine that on, I'll try that later on, you know. And then he walked back out on his hands and hopped up on his sofa.
Okay, thank you very much, Mavis.
Well, it's interesting tidbits, though, so.
All right, interesting tidbits with Mavis Leonard. We'll be looking forward to that. Wow.
Where is she finding those?
Hear about a local paper, a police report, too.
All right, so we'll get some music for her and let her kind of expand that a little bit. I think it's too short, but what we need is, a good segment with some music.
Well, Phil, this is her idea. Don't you start writing to Glory on it.
Yeah, you don't want to piggyback to Glory on it.
Oh, no, I wouldn't want to do that. I don't want to write. Oh, man.
Boy, Phil, laughing at another woman's good fortune?
No, I'm not laughing at her good fortune. I'm just thinking you guys think I'm going to ride to Glory on interesting tidbits. All right. Mavis, very good. Outstanding, as a matter of fact. Love you and can't live without you. Here's this article we were talking about, the Shazam effect. In 2000, a Stanford PhD named, okay, go ahead and laugh, bud, Avery Wang.
The guy's name is Wang. All day, the guy's name is Wang.
Bud?
Hold on, I'm not done yet. You said I could laugh about it.
He doesn't want you doing it forever.
All right, bud, I think you've done enough.
Wait a minute. The guy's name is... I've got a couple more verses. The guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. All the live long day. The guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. The guy... Hold on for a minute. The guy's name is Wang. All the live long day. The guy's name is Wang. Well, when he got out of bed...
You shut up already.
You said I could sing it.
But when Phil said you could go ahead and make a joke out of it, he didn't mean sing a... write a musical.
Jesus Christ, Dickman. How long was that song?
I've just got a couple of choruses.
It's not bad. I mean, you've got a very good voice, bud.
Oh, does he? Excuse me, I'm the singer. Let me see the lyrics, please.
Margaret,
let me see the lyrics.
Yeah, see? And then it changes here.
Billy, give me an A note. Oh, I don't have a piano player. I'll just have to... The guy's name is Wayne.
Too high. Come on, get it down.
The guy's name...
No. The pear-shaped tones.
Will you shut up, both of you? What are you, all of a sudden, her Svengali?
God, man.
Bud knows his own material, Phil.
No. The pear-shaped tones. All right, we're going to take another break before I flip my lid. Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Always great to be with all of you, and much, much better to be with me. I like being with me. I like the things that I do and the things what I say and the person what I am. And I think you know what I'm talking about. All right, be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, I remember hearing this in the NOM for the first time. And I remember just kind of playing this in my head while we were clearing out this... clearing out these rat holes with grenades. And I... Doot-doot-doo. In goes another grenade. Boom! You know.
Says she loves me. Yes, yes, she does.
Ha!
Gonna show her tonight, yeah. She got the way to move me, Jerry.
Oh, God. Neil Diamond, I mean, are you kidding? Neil Diamond is the heartthrob of every woman 55 and older.
All right, Neil.
Yee-hoo!
All right, back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. By the way, to Kansas City, Seattle, if you want to see, and I should really, really let everybody know about the
social media.
Yeah, yes, the social media accounts, particularly the Twitter accounts of the various and sundry guests and friends of the Phil Hendry Show. And that was very entertaining on Sunday afternoon. If you were following Coach Vernon Dozier, General?
Yes, Coach Dozier was very—he was really on the mark, making a variety of interesting, you know, what do you want to call a variety of very interesting. Oh, look at this. Is this the new Viking Stadium?
Yeah, see, now the Vikings are back to playing in the snow, baby. Yeah. Yeah. Pushing it out all those years. God damn. Now we're seeing the Minnesota, look at it, Vikings and Bears in the snow. You know what? You're right, man. Dr. Rothko was absolutely right. That's what he should have been tweeting.
Oh, you're talking about Vernon Dozier.
Yeah.
Well, this is a lot more interesting.
He tweeted the KC game. Well, the KC Seattle game was more important. But look at how bitchin' this looks, man. There's snow coming down. Guys are in their shirt sleeves. I don't know if it got muddy. I don't know how hard it started to snow. But this is from the first quarter alone. And you look, is this Rewind?
Oh, this is the game Rewind. Yes.
All right, we'll keep watching this. But anyway, look at that snow. That is goddamn. And I was in Minnesota, you know, back in the early 90s when they had the dome. And yeah, you could go to the games. I remember going downtown for a function, a WCCO remote thing we were doing with the University of Minnesota Marching Band. Because CCO carried the Gopher games and then, I also did the pregame, the postgame. And part of the pre-game was me down there in Nicollet Plaza, I think it was the name of it. And I'm up there, and I'm saying, hey, everybody, how you doing? Woo! You know, I'm, like, doing the pep talk bullshit. And then comes the Gopher marching band. And I remember I had to take shit from people. You know, the WCCO is, like, this really traditional station.
Are you all right?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you're going, you look like you're...
You know, you looked half mad, Phil.
Okay, fine. So anyway... What do I got to sign up for? What is this bullshit?
This is the Rewind, Phil.
Okay. I don't know, man. It doesn't look like there's much snow falling. So here's what I'm trying to say. I went to this damn Nicollet Mall Gopher thing. Then I went and saw the Gopher game in this dome. I thought, God, this is real. This sucks. I mean, it's a dome stadium. It was a perfectly fine evening outside. It wasn't snowing. It was a little bit chilly. And I think it makes them look like a pack of pussies up there, man, that they can't even take... The cold. I mean, the Minnesota Vikings were badass back in the days when they played in that cold. They never won a Super Bowl, okay, but they damn sure did intimidate the shit out of their opposition because it was so freaking cold up there.
Well, you know, when they were playing on that baseball surface, though, see? Now, hold on. What is it? Don't say something, okay? You're playing on the dirt, and I don't want you to ask me again, bud, why that's tough. The dirt gets frozen, and then the soft dirt underneath... God, I don't know, you know...
The dirt... Bud, we're not going to explain it again.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, but you're giving the look with the half smile.
Yes, you do, bud. You go, ooh. You get a look on your face that, ooh, goody, I'm going to get to really confuse the issue.
Well...
Yeah, you do. But back when they played at Bloomington Stadium, they had a baseball surface for the early part of the season because baseball was still being played. And then, of course, you know, the Vikings may or may not make the postseason. Not the Vikings, but the Minnesota Twins may or may not make the postseason, so they're having to deal with this shit. And, man, I'll tell you what, there's nothing worse than running on that damn frozen grass, and then you've got that frozen bloody... is this the Bears? Where is this fucking game? Chicago? Or is this Minnesota? It's in Chicago. What the hell was I doing?
Oh, Phil, you are an idiot.
Yeah, what are you talking about, Mr. Henry?
It is. It's in Chicago. You know, I just give up. I give up.
Are you trying to tell me you were doing this whole thing about Minnesota? And it's... Oh, man, I think I'm going to weep.
Well, I'm glad that it's showing the Minnesota Vikings and their fans... Of course, they're playing an outdoor stadium now. Aren't they playing at the Gopher Stadium until they get the the new football stadium built?
I don't know.
All right, so here is how all of this comes together. The I'm going to do this music story, man. Forget about the football stadium because I fucked all this up, you know. In 2000...
Well, you talk about the Minnesota Vikings ought to butch it up.
Yeah, okay. Vikings, if you haven't already, butch it up and play outdoors, which I think they're going to. That's the whole point of what I'm trying to say here. Everything I've been trying to say is the thing that I'm trying to say here. Understand?
Jesus H.
What are you, the Godfather all of a sudden?
That's right. All right. In 2000, a Stanford PhD, and we've already laughed about this, bud, so we're done. You've already done your Avery Wang thing.
Oh, that's right. I want to... Please, Phil.
Oh, Jesus.
Just let me see the lyrics again. The guy's name is Wang. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, the guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. All the live one day, the guy's name is Wang. The guy...
Oh, I like that. So you do a minor.
Yeah, I get up to... The guy's name is Wang. So you B minor. And then...
Will you guys get to it, please?
All right. The guy's... I'm sorry, that's too high. Sorry, Phil, but that's...
Jesus, what is that? You sounded like a buffalo taking it in the ass.
Excuse me. You go ahead and laugh, Phil. I'll get David Hall on the phone.
I don't care. Get David on the phone. Get your husband on the phone.
Did I overstep my bounds?
No.
Well, she did.
God damn you, these are warm-up exercises given to me by Lady Franger, who was my musical teacher and my musical mentor at the University of Penn. And for you to sit there and laugh, Phil.
Oh, Margaret, please. Don't you know what you sound like? I'm not saying they're not valuable, and I'm not saying you don't have a beautiful voice. But don't you know that when you're sitting there going, hoo, hoo, hoo.
Go ahead, say it. Do I sound like a monkey? Why don't you just go ahead and be full-on racist, Phil? Call me an ape.
I'm sorry, how does that...
Yeah, you white people, you can call them apes, and it's not racist.
all of yous. I'm sick of all of yous. Excuse me.
Well, she did. She sounded like a buffalo that had finally given up and went ahead and rolled the dice and experimented out there on the prairie and took it in the ass. I'm General Galen Shaw. What are you going to do about it?
Hey.
Oh, my God.
What's so funny?
Well, what do you think is so funny, man? A buffalo that decides to go ahead and roll the dice and experiment and takes it in the ass out on the prairie. All right. Can we get through this, bud, please?
I did it.
Hold on, Phil. I got it. The guy's name is Wang. The guy's... Wait a minute. The guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. All the live long day, the guy's name is Wang.
No, 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 no! How many times... You know, you're going to stand here all day and practice that.
But, Bud...
I'm sick of it. You're destroying my masterpiece.
Will you shut up, both of you? If you got a teacher outside.
I heard that.
Well, what are you...
What does that mean, I heard that?
I don't know, Phil.
Hey, Bud, I'm kidding around.
Phil, do you honestly think I'd let the monkey put his paws on me? I don't think so.
All right, well, whatever you're going to do, do it quietly, okay?
Whatever we're going to do, well, that tears it. I'm doing it right here. The guy's name is Wang.
Shut the door, please.
The guy's name is...
All right. All the live long day, the guy's name is Wang. In 2000, a Stanford PhD named Avery Wang co-founded with a couple of business school graduates a tech startup called Shazam. I remember Shazam because when I was working at Clear Channel, I think Shazam was a part of the Clear Channel modality. I'm trying to think. Robert, you were with me then.
Yeah, well, no, there was a music service and a music tracking service, man, but I don't think it was Shazam.
That Clear Channel had?
Yeah.
Because one of my crew went to work for him, Mark Newman, who had been my engineer. And Mark's an outstanding technical guy. And I believe that's who he went to work for. You know, I can call him and find out. Anyway, Avery Wang co-founded with a couple of business school graduates a tech startup called Shazam. Their idea was to develop a service that could identify any song within a few seconds using only a cell phone, even in a crowded bar or coffee shop. At first, Wang, who had studied audio analysis and was responsible for building the software, feared it might be an impossible task. No technology existed that could distinguish music from background noise. And cataloging songs note for note would require authorization from the labels. But then he made a breakthrough. Rather than trying to capture whole songs, he built an algorithm that would create a unique acoustic fingerprint for each track. The trick he discovered was to turn a song into a piece of data. Shazam became available in 2002. In the days before smartphones, users would dial a number, play the song through their phones, and then wait for Shazam to send a text with the title and artist. Since then, it has become downloaded more than 500 million times and used to identify some 30 million songs, making it one of the most popular apps in the world. It has also set off a revolution in the recording industry. While most users think of Shazam as a handy tool for identifying unfamiliar songs, it offers music executives something far more valuable, an early detection system for hits.
Oh, I want in on this. So this is a way for them to determine who's listening to what.
Exactly. Of course, some people have a problem with that. Some people think that's snooping. Some people think that that's Snoopy. Some people think that that's so Snoopy, it's Red Baron. Huh?
Look, Phil, you know, just because you don't get silly, all right?
You're getting silly, Phil.
All right. Anyway, by studying 20 million searches every day, Shazam can identify which songs are catching on. Oh, so they're just, what they're doing is they're looking at the searches that are happening.
All right, so what's the difference between that and sticking your nose where it doesn't belong?
You're not monitoring someone's phone. You're looking at the actual search engine that you have built. You're looking at the actual bit of software or a part of the software that has that data in it, and you're then making these determinations. So you're not really going into Margaret Gray's phone or Phil Hendry's phone and figuring out what songs you're listening to. So by studying 20 million searches every day, Shazam can identify which songs are catching on and where before just about every and where before just about everybody else. Sometimes we can see when a song is going to break out months before most people have ever heard of it, said Jason Titus, Shazam's former chief technologist. Last year, Shazam released an interactive map overlaid with its search data, allowing users to zoom in on cities around the world and look up the most Shazam songs in Sao Paulo, Mumbai, or New York. The map amounts to a real-time seismograph of the world's most popular new music. Oh, man, that's very exciting. Because that is gold, man, and that tells you exactly what's happening. And if the radio business could somehow get something similar, if the podcasting business could somehow get something similar, brother, ass is gold. Well, why can't they?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, well, you're using Shazam to identify, you give all the podcast fingerprints.
All right, well, anyway, the map amounts to a real-time seismograph of the world's most popular music. We know where a song's popularity starts, and we can watch it spread, Titus told me, who is the guy who, you know... Take, for example, Lorde, the out-of-nowhere sensation. I never heard of he, she, or it.
Yeah, neither did me.
I think I've heard of him, it.
Okay. The out-of-nowhere sensation, 2013. Shazam's engineers can rewind time to trace the international contagion of her first single, Contagion, Jesus, Royals, watching the pings of Shazam searches spread from New Zealand, her home country, to Nashville, a major music hub, even for non-country songs, to the American coasts, pinpointing the exact day it peaked in each of nearly 3,000 U.S. cities. Wow. So it's like watching... It's almost like tracking the DNA of our ancestors. You know, they have those super highways of migration. Now you're looking at how a song's popularity migrates from the city that she's from in New Zealand all the way to Nashville and then on to both coasts and 3,000 American cities. It has become a favorite app of music agents around the country, and in February, the company announced that it would get into the music-making business itself, launching a new imprint under Warner Brothers for artists discovered through the app. Shazam searches are just one of several new types of data guiding the pop music business. Concert promoters study Spotify listens to route tours through towns with the most fans, and some artists look for patterns in Pandora streaming to figure out which songs to play at each stop on a tour. In fact, all of our searching, streaming, downloading, and sharing is being used to answer the question the music industry has been asking for a century: what do people want to hear next? It's a question that label executives once answered largely by trusting their gut, but data about our preferences have shifted the power. Now, here's where this is going to be bad. Here's where this is going to be bad.
Oh, here we go. You got to find something wrong with it.
Yeah, well, no, I do. You absolutely do have to find something wrong with it. This is going... And you know how music executives are. They're motivated by one thing. They're motivated by money. An artist is motivated by money, yes, but that's only after he becomes professional. An artist is motivated by what he's feeling. What's the music that he's feeling? When you get a music executive looking at all of this data, and he's got all the data that he needs to predict what you or anybody out there in America want to hear next on the radio, or what kind of song they want to hear next, or what kind of music they want to hear, then all of a sudden your instincts as an artist have gone right straight down the shitter, and all you're going to be doing is listening to all of the heavy hitters in your music on your label telling you, here's what they want to hear, here's what they want to hear, here, don't do that, do this.
Oh my God, so you're saying all the creativity,
God.
All right, Phil, all the creativity is gone.
Yeah, that's bad.
You better believe it's bad. Of course it's bad. That is what happens in our society. We become so... We want to make everything easy, and I understand that. We don't want to have to work as hard as we do. We want what's the shortcut, man? Where can we get to where we want to go faster and easier? How can we make this more efficient? There's a great word that we love. Aha! Now I know what the American people want to hear. I've got the data. I've got it all. And I don't need Joe Blow, who's, you know, writing music for a band. I don't need to listen to your fucking music, man. Here's what you need to do, because I got the data right here in front of me. I'm telling you, there's going to be a whole new tussle here between artists and between the record label people, the record producers, and the distributors. And this is something, man, that happened to radio in the 70s. When and this happened to Album Rock, as a matter of fact, you know.
Well, you're talking about when you're talking about like when you talk about Album Rock, you talk about the FM.
Yeah, I'm talking about like FM radio.
Talking about what they used to call progressive radio. Now, it had nothing to do with politics, by the way, folks. So don't get offended. It had to do with progressive rock and progressive FM. Was when Top 40, which ruled rock and roll radio up until the mid to late 1960s. All of a sudden, it got competition from a group of disc jockeys who were disenchanted with playing Top 40 music. One of them, Tom Donahue from San Francisco, and they went and they created a radio station on the FM dial in San Francisco, a station that had been losing money, a station that had absolutely no reason to be on the dial, as they say. They could have turned off the, saved the electricity, just turned the transmitter off, that kind of thing. And Donahue went up there with a group of disc jockeys, and they started playing album cuts. They'd only been playing the hits. Within 4 years of that wildly entertaining, unpredictable, and wonderful radio that we, in my high school years, I had this radio, and I didn't have an FM. There was no reason to own an FM radio. So one day a week, here in Los Angeles, KPPC, which was the second station that Tom Donahue programmed, they aired once a week on an AM station. KPPC was at 1240, I think, on AM. So we would sit on a Thursday afternoon and turn this sucker up. It started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they simulcast for, I don't know, 12 hours. That was it. That was my shot of the new progressive rock radio. And until I went out and bought an FM. My father owned an FM.
Well, on the FM dial, they had the beautiful music. I know that. I'm not from Los Angeles, but Frank told me that they had just beautiful music from, hold on. Just beautiful music from KPOL. Do you know that?
Yes, KPOL was one. KBIG, KBIG used to be on Avalon in Catalina.
What are you talking about, man? Now you're not making no sense.
Yes, I am.
Avalon, you're talking about Catalina.
That's what I just said.
Well, Jesus, Phil, I'm trying to keep track of this bullshit.
You're talking about KBIG.
Yes, what is so...
KBIG plays nothing but chicken shit now.
Well, I like a lot of the music KBIG plays, excuse me.
KBIG, KBIG is what we call it. KBIG is whatever the hell it is now. But back in the day when my dad listened to that shit, it was Montavani and all this bullshit, man. It was all this beautiful music, you know. It was music from, you know, musicals.
Bill, you're doing like, ooh, you were gay or something. Yeah, something.
But I'm getting really tired of you, man.
What?
The gay and the black and the... I've told you and I told you a million times I want you to stop. Do you understand?
But you're going like this!
Phil, you were kind of pretending you were prancing about a stage.
I don't care. If you want to say that I look like a little sissy, if you want to say that I look like I ought to be in some pageant with little kids... What, are you crying now?
Yes, I ain't doing wrong.
You butch up, bud, okay? As my father used to say, or I'll give you something to cry about.
Dad!
Well, fella, ain't you a little tough on the kid?
What are you talking about, man? I don't want him talking about gay this and black that and...
He is kind of racist and everything, man. I am not. It's not you.
Oh, shut up, man. What a baby, man.
Get up!
Come on, bud, you know, butch it up, kid.
He's mean.
Now, bud, come on, I'll sing the song. Your name is Wang.
It's not how it goes.
You gonna stay out there and crawl and cry, or do you want to come in here?
It said crawl.
I know what I said. Anyway, I'm telling you, man, you know.
Well, I mean...
No, not well anything, okay? You think you're getting off a funny one, man? I don't like that shit. God, I just thought about... I had the weirdest dreams last night. I can't even remember what they were about, but... Well, they did have something to do with naked women. Okay, Thank you. All right, so, So that's what's going on. And I think that... Well, I know, I was going to pick up the story here on FM radio. So what happened was, these chumps came in with about 4 years, man. They had taken this beautiful format... That the audience was just in love with. Oh, well, we're not making enough money. We can't really sell it. We don't really know what we're playing. It's not formalized enough. It's not scientific enough. We're relying too much on the disc jockeys. There's got to be a better way of doing these things, right? And so what did they do? They came up with a way of charting the top and hot tracks on FM rock and what were the hot album tracks as opposed to the ones that weren't and what were the hot album tracks that everybody's listening. And you finally had what... A lot of people look back fondly on as AOR radio, but I'm telling you, AOR radio was nothing compared to progressive rock radio, which was in the late 60s. These guys, if they could find a way, if they, seriously, you know that movie The Player where they tried to get rid of the writers by coming up with the ideas themselves?
Oh, I love that movie, The Player with Timmy Robbins.
Yes, with Tim Robbins.
Well, I call him, a lot of us who are in the inside call him Timmy.
That's great.
Yeah, you think you're all on the inside and everything.
Just because you're not and you're jealous, so...
All right, Margaret, fine. So.
You said fine.
I mean fine. Yes, in The Player, they tried to get rid of the writers. Yeah, there was the guy actually saying, why do we need writers when we could come up with these ideas ourselves? And why do, you know, and Tim Robbins plays a very sympathetic producer to the artist who says, oh, this is really a great idea. Now, if we can just get rid of the directors and actors, you may have something. But I'll tell you this, they want to do that. Not that they want to do that, but if they could find a way to not have to deal with these pain-in-the-ass actors, if they could find a way not to have to deal with these pain-in-the-ass... They've been doing it in radio. For years, they've been trying to marginalize talent so they don't have to deal with these pain-in-the-ass artists and these disc jockeys and these talk show hosts and assholes like Phil Hendry. They've been trying for years to marginalize people in radio so they don't have to deal with them. They'd have to pay them. They don't have to talk to them. They don't have to look at them. Radio is very open and extremely honest in its hatred of talent. Absolutely open and honest about it. Movies, television, they treat talent very well, but they'd get rid of them in a second if they could figure out how to do it.
Well, you're not endearing yourself, Phil, to a lot of the executives and the powers that be that make the very big decisions. Now, I remember William Gutenberg, or William Gonad, that was his name.
All right, Margaret, can we,
William Gonad?
Not Gonad, it was William Go... That was William Gonad.
Well, who the hell is... Are you making this guy up?
No, I am not. He was one of the very early movers and shakers in this town with regard to agenting. Frank knew him. Frank was in the entertainment law business, as you know, Phil. William Gonad had said...
I don't want to hear about William Gonad, if you don't mind. I got to get moving.
Oh, fine. What a dick. You know, I had something I wanted to say.
I got Bud calling me gay, you calling me a dick. I want people to know that I've got a limit, okay? I will not put up with this forever.
Jesus.
Jesus, Phil.
All right,
The guy's name is Wang. Hold on, Phil. I've got it, bud.
Yeah.
The guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. God damn it.
Wait. Those guys' name is Wang.
I know how to do it. The guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. All the live long day, the guy's name is Wang.
Well, close, but you flatted on that first note.
Hold on. The guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. All the live long day, the guy's name is Wang.
Yeah.
The guy's... Now, here's what I did with it. I hope you approve. The guy's name is Wang. The guy's name is Wang. If I hear his name again, against a wall, my head I'll bang.
What the fuck?
Sorry.
Okay, Margaret.
Okay, Margaret. Sorry.
Oh, man. Somebody gonna die. Somebody gonna die. So how about that?
I don't know what you've been talking about. You've been running your yap about this Shazam bullshit. I thought you were going to tell me about the artists.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're right. I mean, you mean how much money they make?
You don't talk about how much money the artists make.
Well, I mean, I essentially did. I mean, one of the things that Shazam either caused or has been able to track, and maybe it's all the same thing, is they have determined that 1% of the artists are making 77% of the money. Now, that tells me something. It tells me the following thing. It doesn't tell me that there's a limited amount of talent. Doesn't tell me that at all. There's all kinds of fucking talent. There's all kinds of talent. It's not that the talent is wall to wall, but I'll tell you that the talent is more prevalent than these executives want to believe. And what these chump change mothers do is they get a hold of an artist that's making a lot of money. They get a hold of an artist that's making a lot of noise. And they keep running that person right down the throat of the American music buying public, and they keep jamming that person down the throat of the concert goers to the exclusion of other artists, because they're going to make their money's worth out of that artist. So when you get a hold of a hit artist, whether it's a band or whether it's an individual singer, you are not going to be inclined to just run right out now and start giving that artist a whole bunch of competition. You're going to be inclined to maximize your investment and get as much as you can out of that person. So, you know, you have these artists and these companies that are invested in them, and you have these artists that these record labels are invested in, and that the promoters are invested in, and that the A&R people, et cetera, et cetera. And they are going to now take that person and put them out there and make as much money as they can, man. So the focus is not on going out and finding talent. The focus is on exploiting the shit out of this person that you've got. So when you say 1% of the artists make 77% of the music, that of the money, that is by design. That's not just a happenstance. That's what happens. The only thing that I'm not sure of is it's 77% of the money or 77% of the music. It's 77% of the money. It's got to be.
Well, now don't start just coming up with things, Phil.
No, I'm not. All About That Bass, which is a big, big hit, went on to become the top country song this fall, even though it had a very low rating. iHeartMedia's most interesting partner in the search for pop music's next big thing is a 12-year-old industry subsidiary called Hit Predictor, which, true to its name, predicted 48 of the top 50 radio hits last year. Before song debuts on a major chart, top 40 urban, country, or alternative, Hit Predictor plays key sections for its online database of listeners and rates their responses. Any song that scores above a 65 is considered a possible breakout, though above that threshold, the highest scoring songs don't always do the best. Meghan Trainor's debut single, All About That Bass, scraped by with a 68.97 rating, but it went on to become the top song in the country this fall. All of this number crunching is aimed at keeping listeners' fingers off the dial. It's not about eliminating the human element from radio, but rather presenting the most human element, the reaction of audiences, more clearly than ever, said Jay Frank, the owner and CEO of DigSyn, a digital... Well, look it, man. It's not about the dial. It's about the iPod. It's about the music that they've got in their iPod. So if you say dial, you talk about making sure that they download that song. And where are they going to hear the song? Where do I hear my songs? Where do I hear the music that I play? I hear it on iTunes. That's where I go to listen to it. I don't go to the radio, man. I don't listen to the radio because the radio ain't shit when it comes to music. It hasn't been for a long time. People, it may be doing great stuff now. I don't know, but I don't pay attention to the radio for music anymore. I go to iTunes and I listen to whatever it is I want. I go to YouTube and I listen to whatever it is that I want. I read an article about a band or an artist or a song, or I hear a song. Maybe I'm listening to it. I don't know. Generally, I'll hear a new song if I'm listening to it on DirecTV.
Well, you've got all those different formats.
Yeah, like on the hip-hop?
Maybe. And maybe it's just a matter of me going over and downloading music off of iTunes once a week or listening to selections of music on iTunes and seeing what it is that I like. That's my major source of music. Maybe I'm being inefficient, but guess what? That's how I'm doing it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. All right, we're all done, man.
Well, big show, Phil.
We gave 60 minutes. I work my fucking ass off in this show, man. I work harder in 60 minutes than those cats that are doing Serial are working.
That's a big breakout hit, by the way, Mr. Henry.
I know it is. I know it's a big breakout hit podcast. All right, the Phil Henry Show is produced by me, your brother here, Phil Henry, for Siempre Incorporated, all rights reserved, on the Sideshow Network. See you guys tomorrow morning at 8:30. That's 8:30 for our BSP pre-show, and then we will see you guys at 9 o'clock for the regular show. Tomorrow we've got to record, and then we're doing some other stuff. We've got a whole bunch of shit this week, getting ready to produce our TV project. I'm going to leave you here within this moment, Sex Metal Barbie. And a world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Oh, my God. You didn't see it, ladies and gentlemen, but Phil Henry's trying to straighten his you-know-what out in his shorts. Oh, my God.
Thank you.
quiet.